the WEEI studios. 93.7 WEEI FM and HD1, Lawrence, Boston, and Odyssey Sports Station.
You know, tough day for the Jets. Used up all their timeouts in the first quarter, missed PAT. The scrambles, you know, May ran for more than he threw for. Just a lot of mistakes by the Jets, and then that ended up killing him in the end with Jacoby scrambles, and you know, Boutte made a catch down there. Mm-hmm. There were several drops in the game.
The afternoon show with Christian Arcan and Andy Hart starts now on WEEI.
Check commentary there on the Patriots and the Jets. It's WEEI Afternoons. Christian Arcan, Andy Hart. Nice to have you with us here today. The phone number is 617-779-7937 if you'd like to chime in. We'll get to Bill Watch here in just a minute. Belichick asked to comment on that game. Basically goes into, you know, the Jets weren't very good. A lot of mistakes by the Jets.
He's not wrong.
Did give credit to Jacoby Brissett for the scrambles. Didn't really give much credit to Mayo there. I didn't hear his name come up as someone who coached well down the stretch or deserves my bad after ripping him for the soft thing or any of that stuff. Didn't really get a lot of that, but you did get what I think a lot of people were hesitant to do. I was hesitant to do this yesterday, which is really give the commentary on the Jets and how bad of a state that they're in as opposed to what a great win it was for the Patriots. I don't think it was a great win for the Patriots. I don't think anybody said that yesterday. You didn't say that. I didn't say it wasn't a great win. You know, we've seen great Patriots wins. We know what a great Patriot win looks like. That wasn't that. But it was satisfying. It's always satisfying to beat the Jets. It's always satisfying to beat that put Aaron Rodgers. And I think in general that was an easy thing to celebrate. Even if you're really hung up on the draft pick, you were into that win.
Sure.
The numbers back it up. 71%, I think that's probably right on as to where people are and where people should be, and I think that's all fine. But it's hard to tell the story of that game without acknowledging the fact that the New York Jets were in many ways completely dysfunctional. I mean, I know they scored some points and led some touchdown drives and everything, but in terms of getting the play in on time, the two-point conversion that they had, the delay of game on, three timeouts in the first quarter, like, those are things that happen on a dysfunctional team. That's a dysfunctional team there.
They were incompetent.
Yes.
And all you had to, if you wanted to see some famous reactions, the Mike Greenberg, the Mike Francesa, like, the way they reacted to that game was not overreactionary. It was not what we've talked about with Yankees fans. Maybe they've lost their edge or they're overly sensitive or cynical. No. Everything they said about that game being negative and being Aaron Rodgers and the coaching, that was all true. But the reality for the Patriots is it doesn't matter how it plays out. You needed wins. You needed to feel good. You needed some results.
Yep.
Now, as long as you're not in my world. And I should just update the numbers. The 71% is they were happy with the win. There's also a 14% that had mixed feelings.
Right, yeah.
So they're kind of also happy with it. It's more like 85% kind of liked the win on some level. So it was a small percentage that are in my world of, nope, I want the number one pick. I could have taken a loss. And then we talked about it, the Jacoby Brissett factor. Would you have been more excited if the same game played out, just Drake May legitimately getting his first career win, not just the official, he started the game, so he gets the career win. That probably would have done something. But Bill was kind of disrespectful to the passing game. He's like, May ran for more than he threw,
yep,
and like a lot of drops in the game. Like, he was kind of negative about the Patriots, too, after being negative about the Jets, which is fair. It was two teams that had a combined three wins coming in,
mm-hmm,
and one of those was the Jets beating the Patriots.
Right.
So, like, there weren't a lot of wins on the board. There was not a lot of impressive play on the field in this game, and that's the reality. Also, just hit me, and this is a serious question off the top of my head.
Okay.
Not being snarky, but kind of being snarky. Has Bill Belichick ever apologized or ever taken anything back?
I can't remember if he ever did.
Because nothing comes to mind for me.
Has he ever apologized?
Because even he failed to come through with, if Matt Patricia doesn't work, blame me. And then he didn't afterwards say, boy, that didn't work. You really should blame me. That's my fault. Like, and I'm not talking about the post game, got to coach better, starts
right
with me. That was a cut and paste comment he said every time they lost or didn't look good.
The only thing I can even think of, and this is obviously not what you're talking about, but after the Hernandez thing, he said something about Odin Lloyd. Do you remember that? There was a press conference,
yep,
and he said, you know, I just don't want to apologize to his family. And this
yeah.
Thing. something that we...
That's a little different.
It was
that's
very... Like, it's not what you're talking
no,
about.
No, I'm talking more like football world.
But that's the only thing I can even think of, period, that he's ever said like that, ever.
Yeah. I don't think he has it in him, really.
What do you got, Brian?
So I just looked up Bill Belichick apologize on Google. The only thing pops up. Belichick apologizes to the media for being nasty. This was after that Colts loss in 2021. Remember Jonathan Taylor had that long run?
I remember him apologizing.
He says, I apologize if I seemed like I was a little short with you after the game, .. It's not your fault. So that's the only time Bill Belichick
I remember that.
He did. And that was to the media.
Okay.
I forget what he said the first time. I forget what he said that he had to apologize
I don't remember either.
For.
I do remember. But I also was stunned that he apologized because I thought he was a dink a lot of post games. So I don't know why he picked that one to decide to apologize.
19 years. He's like, you know what?
I took it a little too far this time.
I'm being a bit of an a-hole these days.
Because I can remember, even in the recent years when Fitzy and I have been doing the post-game show, he would say things to Mike Reese, and that would get people riled up because they'd watch it on fifth quarter, and we'd get calls from, like, old women, old men, like, you know, it's one thing to be a jerk to everybody, but when you're a jerk to Mike Reese, you've really crossed, like, there were legitimately people that were mad about that, that he was being mean to Mike Reese. So I don't know that he will ever really publicly kind of say, hey, I was wrong about Gerard, you know, I guess calling him out, like, J.J. Watt did it immediately.
Yep.
J.J. Watt, I give credit, did it immediately. I'm still waiting for your guy. I'm going to watch Thursday night. Because I think that's all that Richard Sherman really does is the prime.
I'm not sure anything. I only ever see him on that.
So I'll wait.
My good friend and coworker, Richard Sherman.
Because he was harsh. He was the harshest. Mm-hmm. He's like, you don't have a, I think he said, you don't have a, you haven't coached long enough to tell us we're soft or something like that. Which there may be some truth to that. I see you nodding over there. But.
I think Richard Sherman's a bit of a blowhard.
Oh, he's absolutely a blowhard.
Know? Like, you don't have the right to call us. He's the coach. Yes, he does. Even if it's his first year, he has the right to call that team. It's not like there's a bunch of Hall of Famers on this team. How dare you speak to them that way? This is a team that's playing soft, and they should be called out for it.
Mayo also played in the league.
What's that?
Mayo also played in the league.
That's true. It's another good point.
He's from the fraternity.
Right.
He was an all-pro linebacker. He was a top-10 pick, he likes to tell us. He was a top-10 pick, all-pro linebacker. He lived that life. So you're right to say that he didn't have the right to call his team out. Even if he didn't have any of that, if it was me walking in there, if Robert Kraft says I'm the head coach, then damn it, I'm the head coach, right?
Yep.
If the principal says this is your teacher for the year, I don't care whether you think you should respect him or not. They're your teacher for the year. The position brings authority with it.
Yep. Yes, it does. With that in mind, there may be some people getting relieved of their position of authority soon here. And that brings us to this week's edition of Bill Watch. I would like to reiterate that everyone involved in that piece of production worked very hard on it. Very, very hard on it. Me, Stiz, and young Jacob.
I just laugh.
Put that together.
Every time.
And you can tell. Sometimes you can tell when you hear a piece of imaging that a lot of work was put into it, and it reflects in the quality and all that. And
the
work speaks for itself.
It speaks for itself immediately.
We talked about Jaden Daniels having it at the quarterback position.
Yes.
That has it.
It does.
I don't know how it got to there. But that has it.
It does. All right. Who's on Bill Watch right now? And is Bill even into any of the potential ideas for any of these teams? The New York Jets, I think we can scratch right off of Bill Watch.
They should be on Bill Watch, but he continues to crap all over Woody Johnson every time he speaks.
Unless Woody Johnson has some sort of like humiliation fetish, and he just wants Bill to be there to insult him to his face while he sits there in his underwear, then I don't think that's going to be it. Other than that, though, who is a legitimate target here on Bill Watch?
We got to go back to where we always go back to,
Dallas.
The Dallas Cowboys.
Yep.
The Dallas Cowboys. The
two-game losing streak for them.
Losing streak, the finger-pointing, the weirdness to it, the Diggs lack of authority that I think we'll get into later. Diggs coming out to address a reporter. The owner sort of embarrassing himself and having his off-the-field issues. So on the field, they're a team that we all probably think has more talent than they're performing up to right now. And then off the field, they're starting to look very Patriot, saying dumb things. Players are saying dumb things. Owners saying, GM saying dumb things. The best way to fix all that is to bring maturity, right? Leadership, Bill Belichick.
Mm-hmm.
But the further we go here, the further I think Jerry Jones isn't going to do it. Because you're going to get to some point where it's too late.
Yeah.
I think it's still salvageable. If you believe Bill can turn it around, he's still going to need some time. You need to let him land on his feet. And the further you push this off, then I get to the... Well, what's the point? And, if you get to mid-November, late November, then what's the point?
The Cowboys have not won a home game this year.
Really?
Cowboys are 0-3 at home. Cowboys 0-3 in Dallas.
Cowboys fans have not seen a win.
They have not seen a win. They're 3-1 on the road, and they're 0-3 at home. And the Giants are 0-4 at home, too. So the two teams at the bottom of the NFC East are 0-7 combined in their home stadium. But for Dallas, I mean, Dallas was supposed to be riding high. It's supposed to be them in Philadelphia,
yeah.
And that was what the NFC East was going to be. No one expected Washington to look like this. Everyone expected the Giants to look like this. But the Cowboys have really, I think, taken a turn here. They have a very negative point differential. They're getting beat up pretty good. And I don't know if they're one Bill Belichick away from turning it all around either. I don't know what's wrong with that team, but it's clearly not working right now. And I think that going with another year of him with McCarthy was a big mistake.
Absolutely. But it's what Jerry Jones does, and I don't know if it's a financial thing. I don't know if it's a control thing. But he has done that over the years, and you should have hired Bill in the offseason. You should have hired him in September. You should hire him in October. He would make your team better.
Yep.
Like, I'm not sure Bill is still a great coach and leader of men. Like, I have questions about his ability right now, but there is no question in my mind he's better than McCarthy, and he would give you some sort of bump over the remainder of the season. If you want to make the playoffs, hire Bill Belichick.
All right. Anybody else other than Dallas? There's not a lot of other options here. Jacksonville's still got to be on the table at some point. They lost again.
Yep.
They're what are they, 2-6, just like the Patriots are? That's a team that's probably going to make some kind of move. I don't know if it's a team he'd want to take over. If it's between Dallas and Jacksonville, you go Dallas 100% out of 100.
Oh, absolutely.
Who else? Who else is even
on the list? Cincinnati? You mentioned those teams being 0-4 at home. Cincinnati, 0-4 at home. The 3-5 Bengals. And they're in a weird spot because this is the year they kept it together, quote-unquote,
right,
with T. Higgins, with the franchise tag, the Ja'Marr Chase contract. Where are you going moving forward? Zach Taylor, I don't know. He creates no confidence for me. And their track record of starting slow and having to dig out of holes and everything, and they may still dig out of it, but to me, this isn't just for them in particular. Isn't just about this year. It's about, is Zach Taylor a long-term leader of that franchise? And we've talked about the Paul Brown connection, Mike Brown connection, the sort of thing there. So I think they could be in the mix, but it doesn't feel like they're going to do it.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that either. The only other team that's even on my radar is the Giants. Again, maybe not a team that Bill wants to take over because they suck so bad, but I'm also questioning the Belichick market this offseason. I'm questioning how big that's going to be. There was no market for him really at all in his first year of availability. I don't know how many favors he's doing himself with all this media stuff that he's doing. I don't know if that's getting people. You know what I was thinking about the other day? Every single time he does an appearance with Matt Patricia, like, that's bold of him to do, because I feel like Matt Patricia represents one of his biggest missteps that he's had in his entire career.
Yep.
Was bringing Patricia back and saying, you know what, this guy can run the offense, he's my guy, it's fine. Like, that, having him on that podcast, if I'm an owner of a team and I see that, I think, you know what, this guy's just going to bring in all his cronies again. He's going to find something for Patricia to do. He's going to have him running the offer, whatever it is, and we're not allowed to question it. And if it doesn't go right away, we got a 73-year-old head coach that we can't fire until the end of the second year. Like, that I think is something that people are going to look at and go, you know, not worth it. I just don't think it's worth it.
And
the short term,
there's also this idea that he seems to kind of like the media now. He's kind of growing on him, getting more comfortable. So are he and Lombardi going to be making fun of me in a year, 2 years, right?
Maybe.
I don't necessarily want him doing that.
Yeah.
He's ripping the Patriots. He's ripping the Jets and Woody Johnson, which is fine because there's probably a lot of owners that think Woody Johnson's a boob too, I'm sure, in that little fraternity circle that they have. But if you bring him in and don't succeed, he's going to blame you. He's not going to blame himself. And you're going to see him, Patricia, and Mike Lombardi sitting at a table like the Patriots have to look at every week, taking pot shots at you from afar. And I wonder if it's worth, that's another layer of this that almost is unexpected, that is he worth the trouble at 73?
Yeah.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, Bill.
Brian just said in my ear, what about Chicago? You need to get rid of Eberflus.
Their head coach is 14-27 in 2.5 years with the Bears. They just had an complete collapse on Sunday.
They did.
This is a team that does actually have a lot of talent. Belichick doesn't really like the quarterback a lot. If you've seen some of the stuff he's done on
Caleb
Williams,
he doesn't like the quarterback, and I don't think that you put a rookie second-year quarterback with a 73-year-old head coach who's going to be gone
weird
in a year. That doesn't make sense. You want three coaches in 3 years for the kid? Like, that's a dangerous
path to go.
Are
you
going to
stick with a coach who's currently 14-27, clearly doesn't know how to win?
No, but I don't think you go from him to Belichick.
What if you go from him to Belichick and McDaniels, and McDaniels is the coach in waiting?
Mm. Sounds familiar. sounds like something they've tried before. I don't know about that. But
it's a younger, offensive-minded coach that you could pair up long-term with Caleb Williams. But Belichick gives McDaniels the credibility because McDaniels seems to have problems establishing his own culture footing within organizations,
sure
right?
Does.
So if Bill holds his hand for 2 years and then Bill goes off into the sunset, he's got a rapport with Caleb Williams. He stays on, elevates to head coach. I'm just spitballing.
I swear,
here.
I feel like we had these exact, not you and me, but I feel like I was having these exact same conversations about those two guys on the Patriots 7 years ago.
And doesn't Belichick love NFL history? Like, goes to a team that's over 100 years old, has all this history.
He
would love it.
So I've done stories with him about history and crap, and he's allured by the history. I think Clark Shaughnessy was there. He has a lot
of respect.
You can
talk about Sid Luckman, these guys from the 40s and 50s.
Yeah.
Belichick would be in heaven.
Absolutely. Like, there is an aspect to that. Now, he'd probably hate the stadium with the new age part. He'd probably like the old part that's still
there. Right, no, he wouldn't let them move.
Yeah. But, I think they're in the mix probably to some degree. But I think the bigger question is what you bring up. Fast forward. Okay, we're starting to get to the point where it's seeming less and less likely because what's the point doing it this late in the year?
Yeah.
We're at the midway point, basically, of the season. But our team's starting to get their ducks in order. Is Belichick going to be atop the list? Because we had one texter. Where did it go? 781. All of these teams you're mentioning should hire Vrabel before Belichick.
Good point. Yeah, right.
And he's out there, too, as a younger, available, successful. Not as successful, obviously. He doesn't have the resume.
Nope.
But also, he's 54 or something. You could hire him and think you're getting your coach for the next two decades.
Yeah, if things go right.
Whereas Belichick,
you don't know for sure that there's an expiration date on
Belichick
it.
At best is like a 2 or a 3 year option at this point. He's going to be the oldest coach in the history of football, and that plays into it. Then you play into the part that, well, he rips his ex-employers on the every podcast and TV show he can get on, and he seems to like doing that. I don't know. Like, the more trouble than he's worth is a legitimate question for Bill Belichick.
All right.
Oh, Bill Belichick.
That is this week's edition of Bill Watch. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We'll get to your Bill Belichick-related phone calls and other NFL phone calls, and we'll circle back to what was a big night for Peyton Pritchard at TD Garden over the Milwaukee Bucks right after Brian tells you what's trending.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Well, those Boston Celtics improved to 4-0 last night against the Milwaukee Bucks. Celtics won 119-108 at the TD Garden. Celtics got 28 points from Peyton Pritchard, 30 from Jaylen Brown. Peyton Pritchard spoke postgame about his buzzer-beating three-pointer.
I mean, I just, like, live for those moments. The clock winded down, and I think it was, like, 6 seconds left. So just to get to a spot and raise, and, you know, I kind of black out in those moments and just let it fly. And obviously it works out a lot of the times for me.
Celtics will be in Indiana tomorrow night to take on the Pacers in a rematch of last season's Eastern Conference Finals. Tip-off of that game will be at 7 o'clock. The Boston Bruins return to the ice tonight as they host the Philadelphia Flyers. Puck drop of that game will be at 7 o'clock as well. Jonas Korpisalo will be in net for the Bees. Patriots were off today. They'll be back at the practice field tomorrow. Big news in the NFL today as it was announced that the Texans star receiver Stephon Diggs tore his ACL during Sunday's win over the Colts, meaning his season is now over. And according to our guy Adam Schefter, Colts have benched quarterback Anthony Richardson in favor of veteran Joe Flacco. Finally, the Baltimore Ravens traded for Carolina Panthers receiver Deontay Johnson. Game 4 of the World Series is tonight. Dodgers hold a 3-0 series lead after last night's 4-2 win. First pitch from New York will be at 8:08. Luis Gill will be on the bump for the Yankees. The Dodgers will have a bullpen game. I'm Brian Frisoco. That's what's trending on WEI and on WEI.com. Celtics conversation right after this.
AUDACY. Type that into your app search, then download.
More of Afternoons with Arcand and Hard on WEEI.
You can't let him come in and have that type of impact on the game.
Pritchard for the top. And roll, Pritchard fires and hits out. He hit that from the same park he was schooling kids in one-on-one.
I'm gonna have to you, Eddie House.
Oh, jeez.
One. Got one. Not two. We got three so far.
Look out, Eddie.
You know, I kind of black out in those moments and just let it fly. And obviously, it works out a lot of the times for me. Man, I just, like, live for those moments.
Another offensive rebound for the Celtics. They have at least 11 in each of their first four.
Talked about it, and we just didn't do a good enough job not allowing that to happen.
Pritchard springs free. Here we go. This is his time. Pritchard fires. Oh! The Pritching out!
Whoa. Is that infringement?
What?
The pritching hour?
The pritching hour?
Very close to the bitching hour.
Very close to that, yes.
Easy over there.
Easy there. Drew Carter. Forgot his, I completely blanked on his name.
I did too, but I was going to let you stumble through.
There it is. Peyton Pritchard. 3 for 4 in the first quarter. I think he had 11 more in the second quarter. And didn't really let up from there. Just bombs away from Pritchard in this game where they needed him. They actually needed him to do that because Jason Tatum did not have a good night shooting. And Jaylen Brown was playing very well. But outside of that, offensively, this team was not playing their best game. Lillard and Giannis both had big nights for Milwaukee. They were extra motivated after losing that game to Brooklyn. They're off to a bad start. They're 1-3 to start the year. They had hopes of getting off to a better start than that, especially after they both got injured in the playoffs last year. Middleton's still not ready. Like, there's some issues there with that Milwaukee team, and the biggest issue they had last night was Peyton Pritchard off the bench, who just could not miss. And you heard Dame Lillard talking about it right there. He said, this is a guy we talked about. This is someone you have to game plan for. And just think about that. I mean,
you can't.
You have to game plan for Tatum. You have to game plan for Brown. You have to game plan for White and Holiday. And you also have to game plan for this little pipsqueak off the bench who any given night can hand you 30 points just bombing threes from the logo.
Yeah, I just, to me, it's a little Belichickian. I'm going to game plan for Tatum and Brown, and I'm going to work my way down.
Right.
And guess what? If Pritchard beats me, tip of the old cap, touche, my friend, we move on to the victor goes the spoil. Like, you can't go against the Celtics with any mentality of taking Peyton Pritchard away. You just can't. And I love him, and that's why this team is so good.
Yep.
Because I'll continue to say, at some point, Porzingis will be back, and that pushes Pritchard down just a little bit more in the offensive hierarchy of this team. But he is a fun player that I love his cockiness. He's had that all along. Mm-hmm. He clearly, I don't know if he was born with that or he picked that up along sort of the basketball way. And I know the whole scouting report on him was he was a 4-year college player,
right.
So he played a lot of basketball, and he was good, and he kind of knew who he was coming into the league, wasn't raw, one-and-done.
You know how much you have to believe in yourself to make that many half-court shots at the end of a quarter, at the end of a game, at the end of a half? You know how much? Because that, I don't really believe that there are people out there who are much better than anyone else in the NBA at making that shot. I think that some people believe they're going to make that shot more than the others, and he's
so
one of
mental.
Those people. I do. Curry, you know, whatever. I'm not saying he's Steph Curry, but I do think that there's
Peyton Pritchard
in his
Steph
mind.
Curry. Did you hear that?
There is something in his mind. He believes, you know, I get this ball, I'm throwing it up there, and this thing's going in. And he believes that, and it does go in. And he had another one in the game yesterday, and he was just, I mean, he was shooting from all over the place. Now, he doesn't always make them, and sometimes he'll go out there and miss a bunch of shots. That opening game against the Knicks, Peyton Pritchard was like 1-for-10 from three, and he was the reason why they didn't break the record. Him and Sam Hauser couldn't throw the ball in the ocean at the end of that game when everybody was raining threes. So it's not like this is an every night thing with him, but when he's on, and it seems like that's happening more often these days, you know, it's the progression there is on the rise in terms of how often he does this type of thing. That's huge for the Celtics.
Well, that's where I was only half joking earlier when I said the Jaylen Brown comments about, you know, games against the Pistons where we'll just let P. Pritch go for 30. I don't know if that's the scenario anymore. Maybe it's now there's just going to be certain games against regardless of competition. Because I know the Bucks aren't necessarily good right now.
Mm-hmm.
They're still the Bucks. They're still Giannis and the Bucks. They still, as of a year ago, were considered a favorite in the East with Dame Lillard's arrival and Giannis and that whole thing. I think he's kind of ascending, and that's where I made the comparison to Julian Edelman or Brad Marchand or one of these guys that, yeah, they're fun, but they're just sort of complementary role. And then you're like, yeah, I wonder if he could do that. It's like in the preseason. You go from the third string to the second string, then suddenly you do it against the first string, and then do you do it against really good players? I think he's in that ascension. I do. I think he's in that ascension from nice little player, fun little player, to, he's a pretty good player. He doesn't have to have a bad team to do that, or he doesn't need just more opportunities in a certain game. No, he can do that when you might need it / want it against any team, against any opponent.
Yeah, and that sometimes on teams like this creates a logjam, right? You got two guards that you trust and that you want in there starting and who should be playing starting minutes, and then you have this other guy off the bench who's a point guard. He could be a shooting guard, too. He's undersized, but, you know, a shoot-first point guard. who can do the things that, not everything that Derek White can do, but offensively can do a lot of the same things, maybe even more so. Good shooter, just like Holiday is. Can play good defense, got like 5 rebounds last night. Like, he's a pretty balanced player, all things considered. And when there's log jams like that, that's generally a good thing. That means you have a lot of talent on your team. And those log jams tend to break themselves up. You know, something happens. One guy becomes disposable, or you end up getting a real big trade offer for somebody or something, and you feel comfortable moving on because you got the other two. So that's,
or just an injury or load management, maybe you just say, you know what, he's worthy of a few more minutes, and it's not going to hurt these other guys to have a few extra minutes with their butts on the bench if we can trust him to do what needs to be done and keep sort of things rolling in the right direction. Yeah, it's definitely a high-class problem, so to speak.
My favorite part of the game last night, my favorite sequence, and you probably saw it on Twitter last night, end of the third quarter, Pritchard gets it, bombs another three as time's running out. And then they cut over to the sideline, and Doc Rivers is just hands on his knees, head between his knees, basically, just like, this guy's killing us. He broke Doc Rivers. Doc Rivers was a broken man last night because of Peyton Pritchard.
And that's where Doc went back to, I circled him. And I don't even know where he's talking about circling him on a whiteboard or whatever. And just because you circle a name, coach, what does that mean when you circle the name? Does that mean he's going to be the key to the game? Is that the guy we're focusing on? But I think he, in his mind, there it is on Twitch if you're watching now.
Hilarious.
The broken Doc Rivers and Bucks. Coach, they're really good. If that guy's going to go for like 30, then we're just kind of screwed.
He looks like he's about to throw up.
Yeah. He probably wants to. Look like, it's about to come up. He's like,
because there's probably something to that. Like, you come in knowing if Tatum has 40 and Brown has 30 and they have one of those 30-30 games, okay, they're two top 15 players, whatever. But now you tell me I'm going to lose because Peyton Pritchard hits 8 threes and he has 28.
Especially in a game where your two best players are both getting over 30.
Right, right.
Like, if you went into it and drew up the game and he's like, Lillard gets 30, Giannis gets, we're going to win this game. And Tatum has, whatever, 14, 15, we're going to win this game.
Not so fast, my friend.
Yeah, au contraire. 617-779-7937 is your phone number. Here's Chris and Holyoke. Go ahead, Chris.
Hey, guys, just talking about Bill. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it.
You guys sound like a couple of scorned lovers when you talk about him, though.
Totally.
It really comes through when he does things like talk about Jerod Mayo. Everyone knows, I believe, and I think you guys do too, that their real gripe with what Jerod Mayo did was calling him soft to the media, not calling him soft to their face. And both of us, or all of us, I believe, especially you two, I'm sure, would be upset if the one of you were going and having closed-door meetings with your boss, trying to get the other one fired. We all know that was happening with Robert Kraft. And I think any of us would get any chance we got to talk bad about our employer that did that to us, we would do that. So why is it bad that Bill is doing it?
There's nothing really wrong with Bill doing it. I don't think we've ripped on Bill for taking shots at the Patriots. It's that he doesn't acknowledge whenever they win a game, for one. And the other thing about it is he was getting fired regardless if Jerod Mayo was meeting with Robert Kraft or not.
I don't know that to be true.
First of all, that's not been reported by anybody.
He was the coach in waiting.
Other than Bill Simmons, and he told him that, ahead of time, so fine. Did Jerod Mayo get him fired, or did the 4-13 team get him fired?
And the other,
did Mac Jones and Bailey Zappi get him fired? Like, come on.
And Jerod Mayo told the team they were soft before he told the media they were soft.
Right.
Every player, and I'm not just believing Jerod Mayo, every player said that. Every player said he called us soft in the locker room before he went out there. So he did do it that way. So that isn't the problem.
Mm-hmm.
That is not the problem at all. Bill used it as a very convenient opportunity to fluff up himself, his defensive coaches, his son, his statistics, and everything that took place in his abysmal final season. I don't want to put too much lipstick on that pig. Last year was a pig of a season for Bill Belichick and his football team.
Yeah.
Okay, so yards per carry, my coaches, they were, blah, blah, blah. Like, you can do all that. It was a terrible year, Bill.
Last year it came completely off the tracks, and it was the only move they had. They couldn't, firing him was, I think, they were backed into that corner. I don't think they wanted that to happen. I think they would have just assumed Bill win, 9-10 games for the next couple of years, break the record, and then retire on his own terms. I think if you had asked the Krafts, if you had given them true serum, that's probably the elegant solution they would have rather had, because that means you're competing. That means you're in the playoff mix. That means you're still a team that isn't a laughingstock in the NFL. Instead, he drove that thing into the ground. I mean, there's no other way to say it. You can say we sound like scoring lovers. We're repeating what actually happened here. We're not making anything up.
And there's a reason he was given a two-year extension. Right. It was expected to be a two-year transition of power or whatever you want to call it. Tom Curran has talked about that a lot in sort of defending Gerard Mayo, that everything was expedited. He wasn't really ready to take over this year. There was one more year of sort of training behind the scenes. I would also say, if Bill is who he sort of purports to be, whatever you want to say it, why didn't he just talk to Gerard Mayo if he had a problem with him?
Right.
Instead, he went the other way. He stopped talking to Gerard Mayo. Didn't talk to Gerard Mayo for some portion of the end of last year moving forward. Like, isn't Bill Belichick one of the greatest leaders of men of all time? He's dealt with everything in the world of football. When you go from Cleveland to the Jets and the transition of power at the Jets and the and then New England and then scandals, he's dealt with everything.
Definitely.
He couldn't just say, hey, Gerard, after practice, you want to stop by my office? We couldn't have a man-to-man conversation if you got a problem with the way Gerard Mayo's handling himself? What the hell is going on? If Bill Belichick isn't man enough to have those conversations, how the hell are the rest of us? Because that guy
How's Gerard Mayo supposed to have them?
Yeah. That's what I mean. Like, he's as proven and accomplished and established a man and leader of men as there is in any of these industries.
Absolutely.
And he's not capable of having a man-to-man conversation with Gerard Mayo?
I mean, listen, maybe at that point he felt like it wouldn't have mattered, you know?
Okay.
It's probably something like that.
I mean, and maybe there's some truth to that, but I just, so there's a weirdness to that entire relationship that continues. Because Gerard Mayo doesn't talk about Bill. He's uncomfortable. And then they play it up that he's taking shots. When he was asked the question by Curtis about basically why was the roster left so bare.
He said, I don't want to answer that.
I'm not going to answer that.
I'm not going to answer that,
And he may have said, you guys can talk about that.
You guys can figure it out.
Right, but it's obvious. We all know the answer to it, but he didn't pile on. He didn't, like, there was no way for him to answer that acceptably, was there?
No, not really.
It's kind of a setup question by Curtis, which is a good question.
Yeah, those are the best
kind really
of questions.
You didn't really give him an out.
Those are my favorite kind of questions. Brian's in Manchester. Go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, I like the comment on the Cowboys.
Okay.
I just wish they would just sit back. I mean, that $240 million is just killing him. And he's not the best quarterback out there. And I'm a huge Dallas fan. It's just unbelievable that they can't even win, you know, I mean, at home.
Yes, they can't win at home. I'm not sure Dak Prescott's a big reason why they're losing these games. I'm not sure he's the man or anything like that, but I also think that secondary and that defense is breaking down in real time. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're seeing it. You saw it with Trayvon Diggs, who had all those interceptions 2 years ago and has really fallen off the last two seasons. And this year he's yelling back and forth at Mike Leslie, who used to be here, by the way. In fact, that D's Nuts thing, that whole Trayvon with the D's Nuts and Trayvon Diggs, that guy who he was saying that to is part of the reason I even work here. He was part of my big break into the Boston radio scene because he was working at Metro, which was Total Traffic, that does the Sports Flash. It was called the Sports Flash at the time. Now it's trending now. And Mike Leslie was one of the guys in the group who was doing the trending. It was him, Scott Sudikoff, John Saucier, John Chandler, like a couple other guys like that, and me. I was trying to break in with it, and Leslie left to go to Dallas and work in Dallas, and so there was an open spot. I got it, and the rest is history. But leaving. Thank you very much.
I like
him leaving
stories.
Is the reason why is basically the reason why I'm here because of the D's Nuts guy.
I can blame him.
Yeah, you can blame him for leaving
for you wishing me to die yesterday.
Pretty much.
It's hurtful.
No, I didn't wish you would die. I said, you know, if it would, we could hurry up a little bit.
Yeah.
Is what I was saying.
So you were expediting the death process.
Yeah, that's different from wishing you to die. It's like, you know, we're all going to die.
Doesn't want to wait that long.
Yeah, I just don't want to wait until you're
long?
Like really old.
I don't know. That's
so how quick you want me dead?
Let's see. When's Christmas?
Gotta buy the express pass.
617-779-7937 is your phone number. We'll take a quick break here. When we come back, pretty good World Series if you're a Dodgers fan. Yankees fans, not so much. We'll get to that next.
Get Boston Sports Original on the go.
Wherever you go.
Just download the Odyssey app.
We're right back to it. Afternoons with Arcand and Hart on WEEI.
3-2. Defensive swing. Poked into right field. Soto's not going to get there. Mookie Betts finds a way to bring in Tommy Edman. And the Dodgers lead 3-0.
Mookie Betts with an RBI single. Freddie Freeman with a dinger. Yankees on the brink. They trail in the series 3-0. Game 4 is tonight at 8 o'clock in the Bronx. I don't know. I think this is over tonight. The Dodgers just seem like a wagon. The Yankees and Aaron Judge, he's completely disappeared at the worst possible time, which is, for a guy like him, I got to say, not the type of thing you want attached to your resume. I mean, he's a great player, obviously. MVP, home run leader, all that stuff. He's been a huge boost for that Yankee team and a big reason why they have been as successful as they are. But to completely disappear like this in the World Series is a bad look for him, for sure. And the Dodgers just seem like they're not going to be stopped. I don't know. I mean, anything can happen, I guess. Obviously, you're down 3-0 in the series. L.A. could take it easy. They could assume that they have it wrapped up and the Yankees steal a game or two, maybe. But I think that they needed to win that game last night in a big way. Verdugo hit that home run in the 9th inning. I thought maybe they had a chance, and that was it. That was the series. I think that was the series last night. I would have liked the series to be a little bit better. I would have liked it to go on a little bit longer, considering how good these playoffs have been. These have been great baseball playoffs.
Oh, absolutely.
Until the World Series started, and now it's just that.
Well,
okay,
Friday night was awesome.
Friday night was good.
That was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And now it's kind of petering out after that. Hasn't lived up to the hype of that first game. And the Dodgers don't have a starting pitcher for tonight. Is that accurate?
No, bullpen game for the Dodgers.
Yeah, it's going to be Brazier, right? Brazier getting the start. This has happened a few times, and he's been good. They win these games. They won against the Padres with a bullpen game.
Now, I don't even care how it plays out. It just leaves a bad taste in my mouth. So the Dodgers, who we want like the Red Sox to be like and go pursue that and spend money and be aggressive – in this world of baseball, in a series where people are toting like $3 billion worth of contracts and everything, the team that could clinch the sweep is going with a bullpen game.
Yep.
They have to give me something to hate. They can't just make me happy with like the totality of the experience. It's a bullpen game in the World Series between the Dodgers and the Yankees. That doesn't bother you?
It bothers me a little bit. I think that the Dodgers set up their rotation in a way that they didn't expect this to have to happen here at this time of the year. They had enough starters going into the season. But, yeah, I mean, listen.
It's like I'm getting a filet mignon on a paper plate, and you're like, hey, just enjoy it.
That's the way it goes. I mean, this isn't some new thing.
I don't have to like it.
Bullpen games last year, Texas and Arizona, there's always bullpen games.
I don't have to like it.
No, I don't like it either. I'm just saying. I think this is just an accepted part of the game.
Pitch Shohei.
That'd be cool.
Although his arm, which arm is it that's hurt?
His throwing arm?
Is it? No. The one he hurt at second base sliding.
Oh, no, that was the other one. Yes, that he just got back on the field for. Yeah, I think that was the other arm.
So pitch him.
But either way.
Now you want to entertain me with a sweep. That's how you do it. Even if it's a bullpen game, even if he only pitches one inning, you can entertain me by having Shohei pitch.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Brazier.
I don't even know for sure that it's going to be Brazier. It says undecided. But generally, I feel like when they've had
it has been Brazier
when they
before.
Had their game, Brazier comes out there and starts. So either way, for the Yankees, I'd say it's been a good season. It's going to be a tough ending for them, though, having them come up short here. And as we mentioned before,
is Brazier even on their roster right now?
Is he not? I don't know. I haven't seen much of him, I guess, but it didn't occur to me.
Some
that he wouldn't
ESPN
be up there.
Depth chart does not list him on the pitching stuff.
Oh, well, never mind. Then I guess it won't be him. It'll be somebody else. But yeah, I thought he was the guy that they've been going with. Maybe he's not on their World Series roster.
He is on this. Typical ESPN. I can't trust you. He's on the other one.
Lying ESPN.
Fake news.
Failing ESPN. Yeah, there you go. Anyways, any other thoughts on the Yankees and the verge of getting swept here?
They made me laugh last night with the... So Stanton got sent when he was, like, not to third yet.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not really a guy you should send.
Someone showed a video of Tony Soprano running through the woods, you know, when the FBI raided Johnny Sack's house, and he's running through the woods to get back to his house, and they're like, this is what Stanton looks like running around.
That's where I was going. Not the Soprano one. There were a bunch of those on Twitter last night. Yeah. One of them was one of those, what are those called? Easter Island or whatever, those big rock heads thing?
Yes.
And they're moving it with ropes, and they're, like, wobbling it left and right, and it made me laugh out loud. but that's probably, I bet you Yankees fans, those cynical Yankees fans we're talking about, were probably in a way eating that up. Like, I'm sure that gave them a weird negative energy to see them send him and him be the guy in that situation and everything that goes into it. But you were talking about Judge earlier. I feel like we've gone through this, though, with all these guys at various points. Like, Mookie Betts has had his ups and downs.
In the playoffs, definitely.
Right?
Oh, like, yeah, he was not a good playoff
these
player.
These
yeah.
MVP, I think there was, wasn't he 0 for 22 earlier this postseason, and then he hit a home run to get out of it.
I think that sounds right. I don't know if that's
somewhere
exactly
in there.
Right, but it sounds like it. Yeah.
Loose, work with me here.
Yep.
It's like an Aaron Hernandez doc. It's loosely based on the facts of the real world. No, I just wish, because that I happened to be at a bar watching Friday night, and when I watched that game, there was part of me that was like, oh my God, are we going to get one of those classic World Series, like the history books are going to be talking about this for years after that first game, and then unfortunately it hasn't lived up to that start.
Mookie Betts in the playoffs this year, in all of the playoffs, is hitting .291 with a .976 OPS. So I guess this year he's been good. He's gotten hits in all the series. So yeah, I don't think he had a big cold stretch in these playoffs, but maybe in the last year. And I certainly remember in the first couple years with the Red Sox, when they were in the playoffs, he didn't do anything. His MVP year, even in 2018, he didn't do a whole lot in that World Series run, which, again, they didn't need him to, and that's fine, and they don't get there without him and whatever. But, yeah, that's something that's changed for him. There's players through history. Peyton Manning's another one. Peyton Manning was a choker, the definition of a choker, until he wasn't. Same with A-Rod. Yep. You know, there's guys that's just their reputation, and then they shake it, but you don't always get back there to shake it is the problem. You don't always get that chance. Sometimes you just get stuck as the choker. Now, I think for someone like Aaron Judge, he's such a big star, he'll probably end up, if he doesn't stay with the Yankees, he'll end up back on a team in a big market that spends a lot of money and that is going to be back in the playoffs or maybe the World Series at some point soon. I think he's that type of guy.
Oh, he'll be back with the Yankees.
I think he'll be back with the Yankees. But even if not, I think he'll go somewhere and sign with someone who's a contender, and he'll make them better, and then they'll be, World Series contention. I think he has that kind of impact. But man, this has been a brutal, brutal series for him. He strikes out every single at bat.
This leads me to the comment I made off the air in this whole, what is that, Schadenfreude? Is that Schadenfreude?
Schadenfreude, yeah.
I don't know. I don't even know if this fits. It might be irony, like Alanis Morissette says. I'm not really sure. But this whole idea that everybody was so happy that the Yankees are losing and the Jets are losing, and it's like, shouldn't you take, like, don't you want to get back to where the joy is victory? The joy is in others losing. It's kind of Loserville mentality, if you ask me.
Ah, spoiler. That was the Patriots Super Bowl on Sunday. They got that win.
That's what people used to say when they would beat us.
Is that not true, though?
Right.
It was definitely their Super Bowl.
No, it's true. It's also sad.
It is.
There's a sadness to it. Like, I don't want to root against the Yankees in the World Series. I want to root for the Red Sox in the World Series.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to root against the Jets and just be like thankful they suck so bad and don't know how to use timeouts and don't know how two-point plays work. I don't want that. I want to root for the Patriots to be good enough. And that was the short little span there that I had with Drake May.
Right.
Like, oh, he can make plays. Oh, he can do things that are fun and productive and entertaining. I don't want to wait for others to lose. It's like the Celtics. At least the Celtics are giving us the whole, we're the best damn team, we're going to stomp you, when are they going to lose, which record are they going to break, are they going to go undefeated at home, all of these things. I don't care for this. It's why 28-3 always bothered me. Like, you're celebrating another team's gagging as much as you are your comeback.
Well, yeah, because it was the best comeback ever. I mean, it was
the biggest gag job ever.
Sure, but
you
it
can
was still
flip that.
Fine, but
you can
still
spin zone that.
But you won, so yeah, you're allowed to celebrate both gaggers. Of that. What's wrong with that?
I don't know. I celebrate true greatness. True.
That wasn't a great comeback?
No, like it was, but I still think there was a significant gag job factor to it.
I know. I mean, there has to be. There was a gag job in 2004, wasn't there? Yankees were up 3-0, and they gagged. That's still one of the greatest moments in the history of Boston sports ever. They just put out a documentary about it on Netflix.
But
if you didn't know about it, if you didn't know that they came back from down 0-3.
I think I'm going to watch it tonight.
There's this new documentary. It's this new media about a topic that no one's explored yet.
No, but I've heard it's really good. I've heard it's the best. Didn't you tell me it was the best?
The documentary's the best?
Yeah, the Netflix one?
It's pretty good. I haven't watched the whole thing yet. But
somebody told me it's really good and that it might be the best piece of material media on the 04 Red Sox.
Joseph and Keith were really high on
They're big into it, right? Who interviewed the documentarian? Was that on the Hillman? Did he interview them?
Yes.
So that guy, his name's Colin Barnicle. I knew him growing up. He was friends with my brother. I knew him when he was a kid.
He's got a story for everything today.
And he was a wild little kid. Like, he was
what
just
mean
like,
as a little kid? Like, how little?
About like, young. When they were in, the grammar school, basically.
Okay.
And
what do you mean by wild?
He was just a wild
like
kid.
Like throwing rocks through windows or something?
No, he wasn't like that. He wasn't like a bad kid, but he was just sort of this like crazy kid, And now he's making these documentaries. He's doing great for himself. So props to him. I don't know, he'd probably remember me, but it was a long time ago.
He would or wouldn't?
He'd remember me, I think.
Oh, you sure?
Yeah.
You seem a little.
Use the juice. Get him on the show.
I know. I didn't
what
even.
The hell?
I didn't even know
and Hillman
was,
got some.
I didn't know he was even doing
what
it.
What the heck is going on?
I had no idea it was him doing the documentary. I didn't even know that.
Arkan's like, yeah, I grew up with the kid. He ate at my house all the time.
That's not quite, but I mean, yeah, sort of.
Did he ever eat at your house?
He may have. Yeah, he may have ate at our house. Not with me. Like, he was my brother's friend, but yeah.
You really do have lots of stories.
I know. I do have a lot of stories.
Some point we'll get to a good one.
I mean, that was a pretty good one. I know the guy who did the documentary. It's
He's awesome.
The whole thing.
That's why he was on the Greg Hill show, not our show.
He was one hyper little kid, though. I mean, he was definitely like a hyper-ass little kid.
Seems like a weird thing to go into, hyper-ass little kid to go into like documentary
I know,
filmmaking.
But he's
Is
doing
that a
great.
Hyper world?
I'm not sure.
Doesn't seem like it.
I have all the Netflix people we met seemed very, very chill, but I don't know. I have no idea.
Well, there's a lot that goes into it.
There?
There's a lot of moving parts, so it might be good for someone like that.
Could be. And he also may have chilled out since he was 8, which is like the last time I really ever spent any time
with him.
They
have medication for that.
Could be that, too. I have no idea. Anyway,
or drugs of various natures.
Props to him, and props to the whole Barnacle family there. Anyway, 617-779-7937. There's your phone number. Quick break. When we come back, the Patriots made a trade. Josh Uche headed to the Kansas City Chiefs. Who else are they going to trade? And what's this deadline going to look like? We'll get to that next.